This is Exonerated by Clay Kane. Wrongfully convicted stories straight from the exonerees, shedding light on life beyond imprisonment.
Welcome back to the Clay Kane Show on Sirius XM Urban View Channel 126, where talk empowers and becomes action. Every Wednesday, I highlight the stories of those who are wrongfully convicted and they have been exonerated or they are fighting to be exonerated. Y'all know I am from Philadelphia, and I've interviewed the District Attorney Larry Krasner, and there's been another, it might be hard to say success, but there's been another person freed under District Attorney Larry Krasner, and that's Willie Stokes. He spent 37 years behind bars for a crime he did not commit. He has a really crazy story, and I am excited to have his lawyer on, lawyer for recent exoneree, Willie Stokes, Mr. Michael Diamonstein. How are you, sir?
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me on your program.
Thank you. I want to talk about Willie Stokes, but I also want to talk about DA Larry Krasner. Explain to the audience who may not know what happened when DA Larry Krasner was informed about Willie Stokes' case.
Well, that's sort of a longer story. I mean, you sort of hit me with the $25,000 question right off the bat. I haven't spoken to Larry, and I call him Larry. I've known Larry for, over 20 years at this point in time. I've known him since before he was a DA, and I obviously know him now as the DA. This wasn't really a case where the DA's office and my office sort of worked together to get this done. I will say that ultimately the DA's office did the right thing, but I'm still waiting to sort of get the final word from the Philadelphia DA's office regarding the status of this case. So where we are currently, and this is one of the reasons why Willie isn't with us today, is he was freed because a federal judge signed an order vacating the conviction. But as we stand right now, the DA's office hasn't made their final decision on whether to re-prosecute the case or dismiss it. I believe that'll be made on January 27th. I have every belief that Mr. Krasner's office will do the right thing. I think that Larry and his office have been certainly heads and shoulders better than any other prosecutor's office that I've ever dealt with when it comes to post-conviction matters. And I will say in this case, I believe that ultimately they did the right thing on the habeas matter. And I believe that they will do the right thing with respect to moving forward.
So Mr. Willie Stokes was freed on Tuesday, if I have that right, Tuesday, yes, January 4th, after 37 years being behind bars. So for folks who may, and this conviction happens, I believe, back in 1983. He's convicted of murder in 84. Exactly.
Yes, sir.
But tell people who may not know the story of Willie Stokes and why this is just so heinous.
I mean, this is just an abomination. I'm a criminal lawyer. I've spent my entire career in the criminal field. I was a prosecutor in the mid to late 90s. And I've spent my entire career as a criminal lawyer. What happened to Willie Stokes is there's no other word for it. It's an abomination. And, you know, we were able to get relief for him because ultimately the prosecutors at the time hid evidence. But the number of things that happened to Willie and his case that were patently wrong were just legion. So sort of in a nutshell, the overview in summary is in 1980, I believe it was October, and I don't have the timeline directly in front of me, so this is all from memory. But I believe in 1980, a man named Leslie Campbell is shot and killed. Approximately 3 years or so later, a man named Franklin Lee is arrested for his own problems for a rape case and then a separate murder case. While he's in custody, two Philadelphia detectives, a Detective Gilbert and a Detective Gerard, they bring Mr. Lee down from custody. And for those of you who aren't sort of familiar with how that works, when you're awaiting trial in Philadelphia at the time, I guess he was probably held in Holmesburg prison. That's where I would imagine it was, awaiting his trial. So what the detectives did was they brought him from prison without a lawyer, which is unheard of, but they brought him without a lawyer. They took him from the prison and brought him down to the police station at, I believe it at the time was 8th and Race is where they brought him down to. Now, what happens depends on which version you believe. According to the Philadelphia police at the time, Mr. Lee just gives a statement and says, Yes, approximately 2 years ago, we were in my basement. We were drinking and smoking. And Mr. Stokes, Willie, admitted to committing the murder of Leslie Campbell. That's the police version of the story. Mr. Lee then is remanded back to custody. He testifies consistent with that statement at Mr. Stokes's preliminary hearing. And then at Mr. Stokes's trial, Mr. Lee comes out and says, wait a minute, man, that's not true. They forced me to say it. And on that testimony alone, on the word of Franklin Lee, Mr. Stokes was convicted of murder, went to jail and got out on January the 4th. That's the bird's eye nutshell.
Now with Mr. Lee, and I believe I read this right, didn't they offer him drugs and, to be frank, a sex worker in exchange for his testimony? Is that accurate?
Yes. Yeah. So the version I just gave you was sort of the police version of what happened. What actually happened was there was a guy named Anthony Singleton, and Anthony Singleton had his issues as well. So they brought Singleton down. They made Singleton offers of drugs and sex. So Singleton signed off on a bunch of cases. Singleton said, bring down my celly, or buddy of mine, Franklin Lee. They brought Franklin Lee down and they offered the same thing. They said, look, if you sign off on this case, if you sign on this statement, we will provide you a soft landing while you're in prison. And what that was they would allow him to have sexual relations with people while he's in custody. And they would allow him to partake in drugs, not every day while he's at the, at Holmesburg, at the police, at the jail, but they would bring him down and they also would give him a sweetheart deal on his open cases. So what happened was he was brought down to the police district. His girlfriend at the time was brought down and they provided some pills. And actually, I don't think I can say they provided pills. I think his girlfriend brought pills with him. They did some drugs. They had sex in the police station. The girlfriend at the time, I'm not going to name her for your audience, but the girlfriend at the time basically says to him, what is happening here? How are we getting this done? Mr. Lee then let her know, look, they're having me testify against a guy and they're giving me these perks. Girlfriend goes back and tells mom. Girlfriend refuses to come back anymore. And eventually, Mr. Lee's mom comes in and says, you know, I heard that you're testifying against this man. And it's in the notes that I sent you guys. So words to the effect of, did he do it? Did he really say this to you? Mr. Lee advised his mom that no, he didn't, but he's doing it because he's taking care of himself. And his mom said, I didn't raise you like that. I didn't raise you to hurt another man like that. And I believe the words of Mr. Lee is he told his mom that, look, they're going to give me 35, 40, 70 years. And his mom said, I don't care if they give you 1,000 years. You don't do that to somebody else. And then at trial, Mr. Lee came forward, told the truth. But in 1980s in Philadelphia, it just didn't matter. And that's how Mr. Stokes wound up in custody for going on nearly 38 years.
And wasn't Mr. Lee charged with perjury? The Philadelphia prosecutors charged him with perjury, not over his trial, but over the initial testimony he had given at the preliminary hearing, correct?
That's absolute right. And that was the ticket that we used or the key piece of evidence that we used to get this conviction vacated. I mean, quite frankly, I remember when I first saw the evidence of it, it's outrageous. Outrageous isn't a big enough word. Abomination isn't a big enough word. Travesty isn't a big enough word. To call the detectives and the prosecutors involved, every name in the book, are not big enough words. So what happened was Mr. Lee testified on August the 21st. 8 days later, the same prosecutors who were trying Mr. Stokes issued a complaint against Mr. Lee for perjury, and the perjured testimony was the testimony at the preliminary hearing. So for your viewers or listeners who don't know what perjury is in Pennsylvania, perjury in layman's terms is really lying under oath, and there's certain elements that you have to meet, and the lie has to be a lie, it has to be untruthful, it has to be under oath. And it has to be material, meaning you can't just say, you know, it was raining out if it was just misting or it was cloudy. That's not really something that's material. In this particular case, they prepared bills of information, which is the charging document. And in the charging document for Mr. Lee, they charged him for lying at the preliminary hearing. by saying that Willie Stokes committed the murder, knowing that Willie Stokes didn't commit the murder, and they never told Willie Stokes about it. And that charge happened 8 days later. In fact, Mr. Lee was convicted, and this is from memory, but in January of 1985, that's when Mr. Lee was convicted and sentenced to 3.5 to 7 years, which was the maximum. It was a case where the preliminary hearing was handled by a homicide detective, a homicide DA, where the plea was handled by a homicide DA, the preliminary hearing was handled by a homicide DA. Willie Stokes had not even been sentenced until April of 1985, and they never told him. Willie found out from a colleague of his while I was representing him in 2015 is when we found out. And then we've been litigating ever since.
So let me ask you, I know this is a hard question to answer. 37 years, and what I've read and what you've laid out for my audience, it seems so clear that he was wrongfully convicted. They took 37 years away from Mr. Stokes's life. How did, from your, as a lawyer, how did this go on for 37 years? This just sounds just heinous.
I'm going to give you an answer. It's not going to be a legal answer. It's not going to be a popular answer. But the reality is, in my experience, nobody cares. I don't know. I'm sure your listeners will do their research. My office is a significant criminal office. When we undertake cases and we walk into courtrooms, we do it with a little swagger, right? I know what I'm doing. We raised this exact issue in 2015 with the trial judge, who blew it out on procedural grounds. We then, and that happened right before Mr. Krasner got in office. And not only did the court blow it out on procedural grounds and never reach the merits, but the court was wrong. I mean, the law was clearly on our side. They didn't care. Then Mr. Krasner took office and his administration, actually, we then appealed to the Superior Court, which is an intermediate level court in Pennsylvania. And Mr. Krasner's office filed a brief saying, wait a minute, Superior Court, we don't know that we are going to agree to relief, but you need to send this back to the trial court to have a hearing on the merits. And the Superior Court, they blew it right out too. And then we asked for reconsideration, and the Superior Court said nope. Then we asked the Supreme Court to hear it, and they said nope too. So when you ask me how this happens, institutional bias. Maybe it's too much to blame all the judges. Maybe they're too busy. Maybe there's not enough judges. But this is one where we were screaming from the rafters. Somebody's got to look at this. And it took us going to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the court right below the United States Supreme Court, to actually get some relief here. And they acted very quickly within weeks of getting our petition. Even during COVID, they acted quickly and said, yeah, wait a minute, we need a hearing here. So that's the best I can do to answer that question.
And I hear you when it comes to institutional bias. I mean, I cannot tell you. I've been doing this series for well over a year now, and I've covered so many stories from Philadelphia. What do you think specifically has been the issue with Philadelphia over the decades? If for folks that don't know, there was a famous prosecutor named Roger King, who just really enjoyed locking up as many people as possible, and many of his cases have been overturned. But in your experience, what do you think it is with Philadelphia that has created this culture of corruption?
I knew Roger. I was in the office with him. He was older than me and ahead of me. So I won't comment about him specifically. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, you know, some people might go back to the Frank Rizzo days. I'm not, yeah. I read a lot on, you know, critical race issues, but I don't know that I'm qualified to sort of speak about that. I can say this, you know, there's a very fine line between being coddling criminals and making sure that justice is done. And I think for too long, too many prosecutors and too many judges thought that the way to do things was, you know, that the ends justifies the means. And when you have that kind of thought, that the ends justifies the means, that you run into problems. And you know, I see it all the time. I'm going to try a case later this week where I've got police officers, and it's just a gun possession case. I've got a case where police officers lied in their paperwork. They lied at the preliminary hearing, and the audacity of the lies when they were wearing body camera footage is just unbelievable to me. I got body camera footage. I know that what they said in the paperwork isn't true. I mean, you don't have to be the best lawyer in the world to watch a body cam and see that it's not true. I just think it's sort of it's like endemic that police officers will lie to get to the end that they want. And the problem is when you allow the little lies, that leads to sort of permissive to the bigger lies. And when people look the other way, I think that at some point, and it's not just a defense bar issue, it's everybody's issue. In order for our society to be comfortable, right? Everybody, white, black, brown, yellow, whatever, you all have to believe that the government is going to treat you fairly, that you're going to get a fair shake. And it's unfortunate in Philadelphia that just ain't the way it is. Maybe it's getting better, but there really needs to be changes. There really needs to be changes. And I can't tell you how to do it. The bench is getting a lot better in recognizing there's issues with credibility of police officers, but still, it ain't close to being fair.
And the police unions despise the police union in Philadelphia. They can't stand DA Larry Krasner. They think he is the devil.
That's sort of what I see. And look, I don't want to paint all police officers with a broad brush. There are police officers that do the right thing. There are police officers that, you know, will tell the truth, but I just think that it's too permit that the lying is too permissive, and it's not going to change until on the blue end, until police officers won't be okay with it, until someone says to their partner, no, my friend, you found that gun, but we're going to say the right way that we found it. We're not going to make up excuses. Do you know what I mean? Things like that. So I don't have all the answers, but I know that what's happening in Philadelphia is not fair. I think that some things that Mr. Krasner have done are positive changes, but I don't know the answers. But I know what happened to Willie Stokes is an absolute abomination. I mean, whatever the city does for him, whatever ultimately happens in whatever litigation that he has moving forward, I mean, he lost stuff that no one can give back to him. Time with his family, with his mother, with his sister, with his daughter who passed while he was in custody. I drove by this weekend. There's a judge that lives near me, and I drove by, and the judge stopped me about this case and started talking to me about it. And the judge's grandson was out playing, in the snow right in front of the judge's house. And we were talking about the travesty. And I said, you know what? No matter what he gets, he'll never get back that time. The time that you're having right now and that your son is having with your grandson, he'll never get that back. And if people don't listen to that, whether you're white or black or brown or green, if that doesn't touch your heart, well, then you're the problem.
So, Willie Stokes is now 61 years old. He's not talking to media just yet, but I do want to ask you, I mean, how is he doing?
I think he's doing okay. I mean, it's rough. When he went in jail, it was 1980. I think he went in 83, beginning of 84. I mean, just think about that. I mean, cable TV, cell phones. You know, his sister has an Audi. He didn't know how to get out of the car because the door latch is different than what he saw. So we were hanging out with him. He's doing okay. We've got him, talking to some people, and my office is going to stand by him. And I have another lawyer who's helping us as well is going to stand by him. But he seemed okay on Saturday night. And what I told him was, right now it's the easy time, right? Because everybody's there and everybody's happy for him. But what I'm worried about is what happens 3 weeks from now when the quiet time and he's sitting in his room and he's waiting for the clang of his cell to open and the demons that he's going to have in his head for being wrongly incarcerated for 37 years. So I worry about that. But he's in a positive frame of mind, man. He's a strong guy. He's doing well, and he's thankful for all the support that he's receiving from the neighborhood and from people across the world.
Disgustingly, and if I'm wrong, correct me, I believe Pennsylvania does not have a wrongful conviction compensation statute, which is wild.
So I'm not an expert in that field. I'm a criminal lawyer, and I have another lawyer working with me, a guy named Josh Van Arden, who would handle all of those civil issues. But I am confident that Willie will be able to seek justice. against the city and or any detectives or DAs that engaged in wrongdoing. So, again, not my area of expertise. I know that Josh is working on it, and I assure you that we'll have Willie protected. We'll have Willie protected.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, no amount of money can bring back those years. But yeah, I do hope that he gets some kind of compensation. It's just, it's wild. I want to thank you for just coming on and speaking on behalf of Mr. Willie Stokes. Of course, like I cover this every week, and it's just heartbreaking taking away someone's time like that. And I think to your point, you know, it does, and that's a really important point, that it starts with the police officers and the culture of police changing. Because it's hard if you're poor, if you're black, if you don't have the money or the resources to fight back against if police happen to be after you or detectives happen to be after you. Rich people can fight back with that, but the average person in Philadelphia, especially 1980s Philadelphia, there's not much you could do. So I totally agree with you that it starts with the people who have the power to be forced to change. That's kind of where we are.
And you know, I would even go one step further, as I think it starts with all of us. You know, if we as a society, if we don't accept it, again, whether you're white or black or brown or green or yellow or rich or poor, if we just as a society say, no more, man, we're not going to accept it. We need people to tell the truth. And you know what? If a guy beats a case on a technicality, but that police officer told the truth, that's the way it's supposed to happen. That's supposed to be the right thing, because otherwise it leads to cases like Willie Stokes, where if you let police lie about little things and we just look the other way, you get guys in custody spending their whole life.
You know what confuses me too, is that all these cases that I cover, it's very rare that a police officer or a prosecutor or a corrupt DA, that there's ever any accountability. Some of them, some cases I've covered, those same prosecutors are still working in the same office when they got someone wrongfully convicted. That's the other thing. There appears to be no accountability when it was so obvious they were lying.
Listen, I agree with you generally. I think you're 100% right. I think there needs to be some changes in the law. But I'm not going to tip my hand, and this case is still open. I'd ask that you file this case, because this may be a case where there's some accountability for some people. Again, that may be something that happens later on. Right now, I'm just focused on the 27th and making sure that the DA's office does the right thing. And I'm as positive as you can be that Larry's going to do the right thing. He's very strong when it comes to doing the right thing with police accountability. And he put out a statement that was very positive on this case. I'm sure that the DA's office won't make Willie suffer anymore. But keep an eye out on this case. You may be pleasantly surprised.
Well, listen, Mr. Michael Diamonstein, I want to say thank you for your work. I think that another way that we make change is to have lawyers like yourself, and we have spoken to lawyers directly on our Exonerated series. So I want to say thank you for your work. I mean, thank you. I'm sure for Willie Stokes, he's very grateful to have someone like you in his corner. So it's really important. It's really important. So I just want to say thank you so much. How can folks follow you and support you? I don't know if you do that, but I always ask that question. if you're on,
I appreciate that. I don't really use social media to promote my business. I mean, my name's Michael Diamonstein. I got a website and I got a Twitter handle. I don't even know what it is, but you know, I appreciate that. People generally know how to find me if they need me, but you know, I don't really. I guess I should, but I don't really. But thank you for asking. Thank you for asking.
Definitely. Well, again, on behalf of my audience, all the good energy and just peace and hopefully full justice as much as it can be after 37 years to Mr. Willie Stokes. And we'll keep our eye on this case.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me. Be well.
Thank you. Have a good day. Have a good day.
Care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. All right, y'all. All right. Well, I appreciate y'all. I thank y'all for listening. Karen Hunter is coming up next. As for me, you know the deal. I never really gone.